This is a bonus episode of Making Sunday Happen, the role of the church if Roe versus Wade is overturned, with Abby Johnson. Let's do it.
This is the definitive podcast for helping you plan, create, and execute dynamic worship experiences at your church. Useful, practical content in the areas of production, worship, communications, first impressions, and more. This is Making Sunday Happen.
Hey guys, welcome to this bonus episode of Making Sunday Happen. On today's show, I welcome Abby Johnson. Abby was a director at Planned Parenthood for a number of years, 8 years, I think, and she resigned from Planned Parenthood and is now the founder of a ministry called And Then There Were None, which helps abortion doctors and workers come out of the abortion industry. I wanted to have Abby on to talk about the recent Supreme Court leak showing that there is a good chance that Roe versus Wade will be overturned. So I talked with Abby about how this decision, if it goes through, will affect churches. We also talked about what role the church should play as all this unfolds. So what are some things that you can do in your worship experience or at your church if this goes through or in the meantime, or things that you should or could be doing anyway? Also, how can you continually provide ongoing help to those in need? That's what we're going to be talking about with Abby Johnson today. It's all coming up right after this.
I worked at Planned Parenthood for 8 years. I left after being sold on this idea that abortion was helping women. And so I started And Then There Were None. And it was like just a storm of people contacting us and wanting to leave. And so we're trying to pick them out one by one until there are none. We do a lot of healing. We do a lot of sharing. We do a lot of crying. We do a lot of praying. But it's a way for us to come together and to have an ongoing relationship. And that really is the goal, to make abortion clinic workers zero, to make abortion clinic zero, to make abortion zero. So this is where we need you to help us truly change lives for the kingdom.
Hey guys, if you don't know Abby Johnson's story, take a minute and read all about it. Abby previously worked for Planned Parenthood as a clinic director, but resigned in October of 2009. She resigned her position and is now an anti-abortion activist. Her memoir, Unplanned, was made into a 2019 movie of the same name. Abby, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
So I want to dive right in because I want to get your thoughts and reaction on the recent Supreme Court leak that would overturn Roe versus Wade. Obviously, this is an exciting development for the pro-life movement, but I don't know if any of us were expecting it to develop the way that it has. So let me get your initial reaction. What's your initial reaction to the leak?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like you said, people were excited, cautiously optimistic, right? I mean, we are hoping that this will be the final decision that comes down. I think we believe that it will be. Now we're just sort of in just waiting, right? We're just anticipating this final decision. I think there is a little bit of worry. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I do have a little bit of worry. Now, what is the pro-life movement going to do? Are they going to sit back now and say, you know, particularly in the 26 states where abortion is going to be illegal, are people just going to sort of sit back and say, okay, well, you know, our job is done. Now I don't have to be pro-life anymore, or I don't have to do anything, you know, or for those that haven't done anything, they can say, well, now I don't have to get into the game, right? I don't have to fight. Now abortion ended and I did nothing. And that just proves I didn't have to do anything. And, I don't know. I mean, I guess there is that little bit of worry for me that people are going to become apathetic, or even the church is going to become more apathetic than it has been. Mm-hmm. When actually things are going to get much worse than they have been, because now instead of just one battle that we've had at the Supreme Court, now we have 50 individual battles. And so the fight is going to ramp up exponentially.
So I think the leading theory on the leak, from what I've gathered, is it's probably a law clerk. Maybe Justice Sotomayor's office is kind of what I'm hearing. It's a talking point of the left now that that a conservative justice, a law clerk from the from a conservative justice, which somebody's going to have to explain the logic behind that to me. But I think where we currently are, so we're recording this podcast on May the 13th. So where we are currently is justices are in undisclosed locations, which is probably a great thing. The liberal media is going crazy. Some of them are calling this leaker a hero, and even more than that, from what I've heard. Riots and protests are happening right now at the personal homes of the justices and congresspeople. So are you concerned at all? I don't think you are, from based on what you just said, but are you concerned at all that any justice would change their mind from this intimidation?
No, I'm not. I mean, they came to this decision based on constitutionality. So, you know, it wasn't even because of their like pro-life beliefs. Of course, I do think that the majority of these justices are pro-life. I mean, I don't know how pro-life, you know, Chief Justice Roberts is necessarily. Yeah, right. But I think this is a constitutional issue. And the bottom line is that when we listen to, you know, I listened to the Dobbs case. I'm sure a lot of people, you know, listening to this did as well. When I was listening to the Dobbs arguments, and I'm sitting there hearing this, and I'm thinking, when the Biden solicitors were asked by Justice Thomas, so why do you believe that abortion needs to remain constitutional? Is it the right to privacy? Is it the right to liberty? Is it the right to freedom? Because they had argued all three in this argument, in the Dobbs argument. Now, we all know that abortion was made, you know, unfairly constitutional because they argued the right to privacy, right? But this woman said, well, Justice, it's all three. And when she said that, I thought, well, you've just lost your argument. Roe will be overturned, because you can't argue all three when abortion was made constitutional on one, right? Mm-hmm. She would have had to say, well, Justice, of course, it's a right to privacy. That's why abortion is constitutional. And she would have had to have gone with that argument. She didn't. And so I thought, well, your argument just failed. Mm-hmm. And it can't be all three. It has to be one. And so, you know, that's why her arguments failed, because these are constitutional justices. And that's how all of our justices should be. It's not about whether they're pro-life or pro-choice. It's about, will they uphold the Constitution of the United States? And that's what they have done. So no amount of intimidation or going to their homes or making threats or whatever is going to change their opinion and their scholarly opinion on the United States Constitution.
Yeah, I hope not. I think so. Obviously, it's a terrible breach of trust. Has never happened before, ever. And so I think that is a story on its own, that you don't see Democrats out there, liberals condemning the leak. I mean, they love it. Right. Very, very hard to find. They think it's great. You know, this person's a hero. So what are your thoughts on the media reaction, politician reaction, that sort of thing?
You know, it's been interesting, because of course, you know, now Congress was scrambling to try to codify Roe. They knew they didn't have the votes for that. They knew they didn't. They had to have 60 votes to codify Roe. They didn't have it.
Explain that term for me, codify. Can you walk me through that?
Yeah. So that would have meant that Roe v. Wade would have been a federal law. And they would have had to, so that would have meant that abortion, elective abortion, so abortion for any reason, okay, any and every reason, abortion on demand would have been legal through all 9 months of pregnancy. In every state, okay, the states would have had no say on this. Now, they have tried to pass this so-called Women's Health Protection Act. This is the third time they have tried to pass it. It has now failed three times. It has failed now for a third time with a vote of 49 to 51. Every single Republican senator voted against the Women's Health Protection Act. Every single Democrat voted for it, except for one, Joe Manchin, always Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia. So the other option that they have is to end the filibuster, and they would only need 50 votes for that. They do not have the votes for that either. So, of course, Kamala Harris and Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden, or someone who wrote a statement for Joe Biden, came out and said, you know, oh, this is terrible. They're taking away, you know, women's rights to her own body, which, of course, we know is not true. Women have many, many choices to do what they will with their own body. What you may not do, what we are telling women what they should not do, is they should not infringe upon the rights of a unique and individual human being that is inside of their body. Our rights stop when it begins to infringe on the individual rights of another human being. And that's exactly what abortion does. When you begin to infringe on the rights of another individual human being, that is called oppression. And that is the exact reason that the United States got rid of slavery. It's the exact reason that the United States intervened in the Jewish Holocaust, because that was oppression. That was wrong. And that is why we must intervene when it comes to the tragedy of abortion.
So walk me through what's next. So we anticipate that it is going to happen. It is going to go through. Mm-hmm. And they are looking at moving it up, which I think they should, now that it's out there, and just it would prolong the riots and protests and everything else, I think. So it could be, by the time this airs, it could be already done, because I think they were looking at maybe May 16th or something like that, I've heard. So walk me through next steps. So if this happens, walk me through, you know, what will kind of go to the state level.
Okay, so so it will come out. Generally, decisions come out 10 a.m. Eastern on Mondays. So we're looking at either the 16th, May 16th, the 23rd, or the 31st, because the 30th is Memorial Day. So we're looking at, probably it could come out, if it's going to come out in May, it will be one of those Mondays. They generally don't come out just random days. They can, but generally the decisions are issued on Mondays. Okay, so if it's released on one of those Mondays, then 26 states have either constitutional laws, state constitutional laws, or state constitutional amendments, or something called a trigger law, a trigger ban. And that means that when abortion is made illegal, so when Roe is overturned, those states have a law on the books that is triggered, where abortion would be illegal in those states. There's about a dozen states that have that. So 26 states in total where abortion will be illegal, completely illegal.
Which is a huge win for us.
It's a huge win. Those 26 states make up about 40% of the female population in childbearing years. So that means about 40% of women would not have easily accessible rights to murder their children. Also, huge win.
Yeah.
Okay. The law is a teacher. And the law oftentimes dictates our morality. You know, why don't we just all go around and say, you know what? I like that car sitting on the road better than my own car. I'm just going to steal it and take it for myself. Well, because the law tells us that if I do that, that's a crime. That's wrong. That is illegal. And I could get in trouble for that, right? I could go to jail for that. That is the wrong thing to do, right? That is a criminal activity. And so I don't do it. Plus, I'm a Christian. I have a conscience, and that's the wrong thing, right? But overarchingly so, even for those who are not Christian, it's a crime. It's the wrong thing to do, right? It's illegal. There were many, many women who came into my abortion facility who sat across the desk from me and said, you know, I've always believed abortion is wrong, but it's legal. So it must be okay. The law is a teacher, and it often dictates morality in a society. So when the law tells us in these 26 states that abortion is wrong, that abortion is illegal, for many, many women, that in itself will be a deterrent to walk into an abortion facility, even in another state, and say, I want to take the life of my child, because that's very powerful. The law is very powerful. And so then, but that's not over. That doesn't mean it's over. It doesn't mean it's over in those states. There will be many people trying to continue to rally. There are many old billionaires like Warren Buffett and George Soros and these other people who are going to be dumping money into those 26 states, intending to get the laws changed. So we have to be on guard. We have to be continuing to work in those states. Pregnancy centers are going to be overrun with clients who are in need of resources, assistance, rent help, utilities paid, car payments made. We are going to have to be really, as Christians, as people of faith, dumping our own resources into these pregnancy resource centers to help them, help the women who are coming in need of services. Look, this is what we have wanted. This is what we have prayed for. And now we must be ready to sacrifice for this victory that we are about to see.
Good. So 26 states could very well ban abortion. So I think that you'll see California, New York, Illinois, others swing extreme the other way.
Yes. We already have seen that.
Right. And so you got super red and super blue.
Yeah.
Do you think that states are going to really draw a hard, hard line, most states? Or do you think it will be, you know, okay, 15 weeks is okay? Or do you think it's a pretty hard line?
I think that there will be a few states. You know, Florida is going to be sort of in the middle. They have a 15-week ban. There's going to be some states that are sort of, you know, okay, maybe they have a 15-week, maybe they have a heartbeat bill, something like that. But I think the majority of states are going to be super red, or they're going to be super blue. And then there's going to be, you know, maybe a fewer than a dozen states that are sort of in the middle. They have some sort of ban somewhere, but I think it's either going to be they're swinging that pendulum far to the left or far to the right.
Which I think that's fine. I mean, I think that lets us know where the states stand and where people might need to live and settle.
Yeah, exactly. But, because look, I mean, California, Governor Newsom has already said that they are going to be giving $125 million of California taxpayer funds to make California an abortion sanctuary state. And I mean, you know, why not? They're already a sanctuary state for everything else that's immoral. So why not? But, you know, if that's where you want to live and if that's where you want your state tax dollars to go, then by all means, continue to stay there. But if you don't, then come to Texas, come to Louisiana, come to another state where your tax dollars are not going to be funding abortion sanctuaries, right? So people are going to have to make that decision for themselves. And and I think that states are going to be setting people up to know just what they're supporting.
Yeah, good. All right. So one of the talking points of the left is that 70% of Americans approve of Roe, or there's several stats like that that are bouncing around. So is that true? Are people ignorant of what Roe is and what it does? How can we trust the stats that we're hearing?
Yeah, I don't think that statistic is true at all. In fact, the stats that have come out from Gallup and other statistics show that the overwhelming majority of Americans actually believe in abortion restrictions. So, you know, we know that the overwhelming majority of Americans do not believe in the codification of Roe, if you explain it to them. So if you say that, you know, do you believe in the codification of Roe? They're like, I have no idea what that means. If you say, you know, do you believe in Roe v. Wade? People are like, oh, sure. Right. They have no idea what that means. Right. If you say, do you believe that abortion should be legal through all 9 months of pregnancy? They're like, no, of course not. You know, do you believe you should be able to kill a baby in the womb at 9 months? No. Right. At 8 months? No. At 7 months? No. A lot of Americans do believe that there should be restrictions on abortion. A lot of Americans believe that within the first 8 weeks, abortion is acceptable. You know, definitely after the first trimester, the majority of Americans believe abortion should not be available to women. So the overwhelming majority of Americans do believe in some sort of restriction on abortion. And what we have found through studies, and Students for Life of America actually put this out, they had done some studies, and they found that the majority of younger generations are quite movable. They're the most movable generation on abortion. So if you explain the science to them, if you explain the facts to them, they're the most movable generation. So if you tell them, you know, well, this is fetal development. This is what it looks like. This is a baby in the womb. If you show them pictures, ultrasound pictures, they're actually the generation that will say, oh, you know what? Abortion is wrong in all circumstances, at all gestational times.
So in our last few minutes together, let's talk about how this relates to the church. So you talked about this a little bit earlier. What should the church be doing? What should pastors be doing? Talk to the church for a minute.
Yeah, this is a pivotal time in church history. You know, we know that over 50% of women going to have abortions are coming directly from the church. So we know that, you know, that means that a large portion of church congregants right now are women and men who have suffered from or are suffering from abortion regret. And they're feeling very alone. They're feeling separated from God because of past abortions. Every single time I go to speak at a church, I have a woman that walks up to me that says, I had an abortion 40 years ago. You're the first person I told. I had an illegal abortion 55 years ago. You're the first person I've told. Decades ago, these women had abortions. They've never spoken to their pastor about it. They've never told anyone because they didn't know their church was a safe place. So right now, the church needs to be intentional on making their church a safe place to talk about abortion, to heal from abortion. How do we do that? We can do that in very simple ways. First of all, we need to be talking about abortion from the pulpit. We need to be talking about the healing power of God's mercy, of His grace, of His forgiveness from the pulpit. But we can do it in other ways too, because it doesn't just need to be a one-time sermon that we give once a year on Sanctity of Human Life Sunday. And then we say, okay, we did our job. Now everybody knows it's a safe place to talk about abortion, because you may have that one, you know, post-abortive woman or man who was sick that Sunday and didn't show up, right?
Right.
So we need to make it a safe and welcoming environment. How do we do that? Well, we make, you know, the sanctity of human life something that we do on a regular basis. So maybe we have a diaper drive for our local pregnancy center, and we announce that several times during the service. And we let people know this is a church that respects human life. This is a church that respects human life in the womb. And we encourage our congregants to bring diapers, to bring wipes, to bring formula, whatever it is, especially right now in a formula shortage, right?
I was about to say, if you can find it.
Yeah, you know, bring it. Our pregnancy centers need it. Let people know that there is a pregnancy center in town, and this is a church that supports it. Start making a monthly donation as a church congregation to your local pregnancy center. Maybe as a church, if you have an abortion facility in your town, maybe as a church, once or twice a year, maybe during 40 Days for Life, whatever it is, you as a church, you go and stand and pray out in front of that abortion facility. We need to see pastors taking the lead, praying out in front of an abortion facility. It's not crazy. It's not weird. It's totally normal. That's where babies are dying. That's where we need to be showing up as Christians. You don't have to hold a weird graphic sign. You don't have to do anything strange. You literally show up for an hour and you just pray. Maybe as a church, you guys could show up for a few hours, fill some slots, fill our time slots, go out there and pray. Super simple. At our church, I'm, of course, the Respect Life coordinator, naturally. So we have once every 6 months, we have a healing service for women who have suffered, women and men who have suffered pregnancy loss. We open it up to the community. Anybody who has experienced miscarriage, stillbirth, abortion, we have a healing service. It's open to the community. Lets people know this is a safe place to come and pray. Our pastor will pray over them. We have a beautiful song service. We have flowers. People can come and honor their children in that way. Lets people know it's a safe community. In our bathrooms, we have pamphlets in the women's and men's bathrooms. You know, have you suffered from an abortion? There's healing. Here's a healing pamphlet for you where you can go to get services. Are you in a crisis pregnancy? Here's pamphlets for our local pregnancy center. Here's where you can go to get help. The Respect Life Ministry also put a little cabinet with diapers, from newborn diapers to size 4 in both of our bathrooms. And we put announcements up that said, hey, in the bulletin, and we made pulpit announcements saying, hey, we love babies here. Come here with your babies. We love them. This was put up by the Respect Life Ministry. We want you to come with your children. We've put diapers in here. Please don't shy away. This is a church that loves babies. So there's just little things like that that you can do throughout the year to let people know in your congregation that this is a safe place. If you are in a crisis pregnancy, if you have had an abortion, we are a place for you.
So one thing I've seen online, more progressive Christians will use the argument of, you know, we need to be for all life, you know, and so the argument now turns to immigration and other topics.
Yeah.
What's your response of that to? My response is usually, let's deal with one thing at a time and let's talk right. about not, let's, can we agree that we shouldn't kill our babies? You know, but what's your response to a more progressive thought of, well, we should respect all life?
Well, I mean, sure, you can have that belief. You can hold a, you know, consistent life belief, sure. But the pro-life movement is about ending the slaughter of human beings in the womb. Period. And it's okay to be singularly focused on that issue. Nobody gets mad at the Breast Cancer Research Foundation for not focusing on prostate cancer, right? Nobody gets mad at the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation for not focusing on breast cancer, right? It's okay to be singularly focused on eradicating one issue. And, you know, let's be honest, immigration is not a pro-life issue. It's an immigration issue. The death penalty is not a pro-life issue. It is a death penalty issue. The pro-life movement is about ending the destruction of human life in the womb. That's it. And when we start piling on all of these other issues, we lose focus. And we need to be laser focused on the greatest injustice we have ever seen in human rights history. And that is 63 million deaths of innocent human beings just in our country alone.
All right, last question for you. What would the you of 15 years ago think about this moment right now?
I would have thought it was never going to happen, because there's one thing that I was sure of when I left Planned Parenthood and when I worked at Planned Parenthood, and that was that Roe would never be overturned. And abortion was, Planned Parenthood was so sure of that. And if anyone is to blame for what's happening right now, it is the Democrats. It is these, you know, this leftist abortion lobby. Because when I left Planned Parenthood, you know, the talking point was still pretty much keep abortion safe, legal, and rare. That talking point resonated with the bulk of Americans, you know, even, you know, sort of moderate Republicans, even a lot of Republicans, even, you know, the independents. People were like, no, okay, you know, abortion, safe, legal, and rare. That sounds reasonable. It wasn't until the Democrats, you know, took abortion into their party platform. It wasn't until, you know, you saw Planned Parenthood and the abortion lobby really swing that pendulum to the far left and start talking about abortion on demand without apology. And by the way, the taxpayers are going to pay for all of it. And, you know, elective abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. That was when so many people were like, wait, what? That's disgusting. That's gross. We're not on board with that. That was when you really started to see a groundswell from state legislatures, from, you know, the pro-life movement, and all of these sort of moderate Republicans and all these independents said, oh, heck no, we are not on board with that. That is why Roe hangs in the balance right now, and they only have themselves to blame.
Good. How can we support? And then there were none.
They can go to abortionworker.com. and support our ministries. We also run a 24-hour hotline called loveline.com. If you ever run into someone, or you yourself encounter someone, or maybe in your church, someone who is in a crisis situation, whether it's a crisis pregnancy, a single mom who needs rent assistance, utility assistance, if you are a victim of domestic violence or know someone who is a victim of sex trafficking, it's a 24-hour crisis line. We help anyone in crisis. You can send them to loveline.com.
Awesome. Abby, thanks for your time and the updates. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you.
The show notes for this episode are available now at makingsundayhappen.com.
Hey guys, thanks so much for checking out this bonus episode of the podcast. Any of the ideas that Abby mentioned for your church, if you need help with the media content surrounding those events, please let us know. We have a full library of ready-made media that might hit your event or help you promote your event with an announcement graphic or a video or something like that. Also, we can make anything custom that you might need for your church, for your screens, for your social media, for your website. Please let us know if we can help you and your church in the coming weeks and months and all throughout this year on this topic or any topic that you might be dealing with at your church. You can go to 1230.media to check us out. 1230.media. Well, we love you guys. Continue to create amazing worship experiences at your church this weekend. I'll catch you next time.
Making Sunday Happen is a production of the Ministry of 1230 Media. For show notes, archive episodes, and more free resources for your church, visit MakingSundayHappen.com.